You are tuned to CICK News on 93.9 FM in Smithers. CICK News is your news source for regional and provincial news Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 4 p.m. It's hosted by Dan Messick and myself, Pamela Hassan. Find and follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com and frequencynews.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. CICK News is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada.
Today on CICK News, John Brink has been in the forestry business for more than 60 years. His Brink Forestry Products, based in Prince George, is the largest secondary lumber manufacturer in Canada and the largest producer of finger-jointed studs in North America, employing over 500 people across northern BC. Just this week, following yet another announcement from multinational forestry giant Canfor that they would be shutting down three more sawmill operations in northern BC, Brink is making a move to acquire mills in Houston, Bear Lake, and Fort St. John, which could save hundreds of jobs. While many in the forestry industry are lamenting the glory days of forestry in BC, Brink has an optimistic outlook and says that the time is right for huge opportunities in BC's forestry industry to finally be realized. Today, my conversation with John Brink about how he plans to reinvigorate northern BC's sawmills. Stay with us.
Hello, Dan. My name is John Brink. I'm living in Prince George, have been here for 60 years. Originally came from Holland. Actually came with nothing, $25.47 in my pocket, and the dream of building a lumber mill. And so that's how it all kind of started, and ended up in Prince George. They said in 1965, this was the place to go because it was a boom town and lots of mills being built, pulp mills, and you name it, it was here. So that's where I started as a cleaner man, lumber pilot, did all of that kind of stuff. And then gradually started off with being a superintendent in one of the larger mills here. And then in 1975, I started Brink Forest Products. And, as a company that was working mainly with my experience in Europe on value-added products. And I started off with three employees and an idea, and gradually grew it up from there. So now, 50 years later, we probably are one of the larger value-added companies in Canada, I would think, and employ well over 400 people. We have an operation in Prince George, one in Vanderhoof, one in Houston, BC. I've been in Houston for well over 20 years. So that's where we are. And obviously the industry has been having challenges, and we look at that also as an opportunity.
Yeah, no doubt. John, thanks so much for being with us here on CICK News. You kind of laid it all out there, and now here we are. And this comes after an announcement from your company recently that you're looking to purchase some of the tenures, the logging tenures, but also the mills that Canfor is opting to shut down in the coming weeks and years. So this looks like it's a continuing trend. Maybe firstly, tell us a little bit about why you're making this pitch to purchase these mills from Canfor, and why you think that you can make the business case for these shuttered mills rather than, you know, this multinational corporation such as Canfor.
So, yeah, good question, Dan. Obviously, as I indicated to you, I'm nearly 84 years old, actually, and I started working when I was 13 as a furniture maker in Holland. And so I have 70 years of experience, 60 in Canada, here in northern BC, worked in all elements of the forest industry, and I think I'm pretty good at what I'm doing. And then the other part about it is that I consider myself one of, and everybody around here, northern BC in particular, and it's probably one of the most beautiful places to be, but not only in terms of nature and all the other kinds of things, but it's a huge place for opportunity, in my opinion, and that includes the forest industry. And so although the forest industry has gone through some challenges, my company I'm the sole owner of all my companies. I have other companies as well, three silos. The one is lumber, the other one is warehousing, logistics, and then the other one is real estate, residential, commercial, and industrial. So on the lumber side, obviously it's been a challenge. I've done several podcasts on the BC forest industry in crisis. And I believe it's also Canfor made the announcement of initially shutting the operations in Houston and in Bear Lake and Apollo. They have already curtailed substantially before that with other operations in Fort Nelson, Chetwynd, then McKinsey, and on and on and on. So, and obviously the last announcements have been another permanent shut in Fort St. John and in Vanderhoof. So for us, it's critical because we rely on the forest industry in supplying raw material for our value-added plants. And so I saw it as an opportunity. I presented Cantrell with a letter of intent for us to purchase not only the operations of Pollard, that tenure in their operations in Bear Lake, but also the operations in Fort St. John, the operations in Vanderhoof, and the operations in Houston. And so I made that presentation to them. I think it was on September the 16th. So we are ongoing and doing an evaluation of the tenure and the volume, the value, and all of those kind of things. And probably we'll present that to Canfor early next week. So I'm very optimistic that we will be successful in that. And I'm a believer. I'm not leaving. I've been here for 50 years, 60 years. I believe that British Columbia has huge potential. Forest industry has huge potential, especially in northern BC. And so that's what I want to do. And I'm working closely together with First Nations, communities, labor, and all the other parties directly interested in these issues. And I'm putting everything on the line and believe that I can make it work. And I'm not being critical of the shareholders of, Canfor. I know Jimmy Patterson well. I have a great deal of respect for him and for Don Kane, CEO of Canfor. But apparently the stock market thinks that whatever Canfor is considering and probably my indications of wanting to purchase them, the market has received well, because I think Canfor shares have increased by, since I made the offer, by about $300 million. So that is pretty impressive.
Yeah, no doubt. John, you mentioned a few things there, and it sounds like, a general consensus is that we've seen about, somewhere in the neighborhood of about 40,000 forestry jobs just here in BC that have been lost since the 90s. So that's quite a big chunk. But we've also seen, in the last, I'd say 10, 15 years, this high volume of wood, of timber going to very large mills. And, oftentimes when I talk to those in the forestry industry that have been there for decades, they remind me that, at one point, every community had a small mill. Every village had a small or medium-sized mill across the Northwest, across the whole northern BC corridor, and slowly but surely that got whittled down. A lot of them got the conglomerates, took a bunch of small ones, made one big one, and a lot of these communities lost these mills. And it sounds like now, after all these years of this high volume with, pine beetle, kill wood, stuff like this, that now we're seeing these big fires. It's reducing the timber harvest areas. It's reducing the amount of fiber that is available. Where do you see this going, and how would you like to see this shift happen? I know there's been a lot of talk of going back to those days when we saw a lot of smaller, medium-sized mills and not these really big ones. What's your take on all of that?
So, Dan, I've been here for 60 years, so I've seen it all. And, when I came here, there were mills all over the place. In the Prince George area in the 50s, late 40s, there were 800 little mills. 800. I'm not saying that they were smaller mills, they work in the bush. But when I came in the 60s, there was already some consolidation, but there were still a lot of mills in the communities. And obviously, as you correctly indicated, that has been more, less than half a dozen organizations now, less than four or five probably, control 80% of the annual arable cut in crops of British Columbia. So, you know, and that is a question about that. Is that too much control by too few? They have obviously decided to invest elsewhere in this U.S. Southeast, Sweden, other places. That is their, especially public companies, they have to make decisions that suit them. You know, that in regards to what has happened to the industry and the employment is that up to 2000, there were 180,000 people employed in the forest industry in British Columbia. It's now down to half that, 90,000, and further reducing it even further. In terms of the annual allowable cut in the province of British Columbia, the average used to be around 60, 65 million cubic meters over the last 20 years, saving except for the pine beetle when there was the spiking of it. Right now, it's likely closer to 50 million cubic meters. The problem with it is that bureaucracy, government policy, I'm not beating up on the NDP or whoever, I'm not beating up on them. Unfortunately, the annual allowable cut accessible to that is likely because of policies, including, you know, the land-based decisions that are being made and the bureaucracy surrounding that, to about half of that, 25 million cubic meters annually. That means there will be a further reduction of mills in the areas. I think, you know, that there used to be, again, up to 2000, about 120 sawmills in the province of British Columbia. It's now closer to 60. And more of them, recently, as we already know, are shutting down or leaving altogether. So I'm a believer. I'm not leaving. I've been here for 60 years. I have my company for 50 years. The difference between me and them is that I'm a value-added manufacturer, that if we have a sawmill, we will not just produce spaghetti, what I call it, two-by-fours. We will take the top 25% of the lumber that we manufacture and the bottom 25% of the lumber, and we send it up the value chain. That's what I intend to do. And we will be closer operating with First Nations labor and communities. And you were referring to the used to be mills and all the, they call that appurtenancy, but the you manufactured the lumber in the area that it is harvested. That disappeared, unfortunately, with the government, and again, not beating up on the BC Liberals, they were called then. Now United, you know, that they changed a lot of the policies. Part of that was the concept of appurtenancy and more consolidation that stimulated. And then the other part, the value-added sector, I've been advocate of that for the last 40, 50 years. I believe we have to go up the value chain. Unfortunately, governments both, it's not unique to one government, it's the BC Liberals as well as the NDP have chosen to reduce the amount of fiber available to those kind of companies to get further value out of manufacturing. There used to be eight, and I was the founding president of the BC Council Value Added Wood Processors, eight associations, 800 companies. Right now, there's less than 25% of them remaining. This will change all of that. My acquisition will change the philosophy around what do we do in terms of manufacturing. First and foremost, we have to look at the land base. We have to do more intensive forestry rather than just harvesting. We have to put more into it. There's no reason that we cannot double the annual allowable cut in the province if we practice intensive forestry. That's the first one. Then we have to have longer-term policy, not for the next 4 years when the next election is up and then the next, every 2 years there's a new minister of forest. We have to prepare a longer-term strategy as to what do we want to accomplish over the next 20, 40, 60 years. and what will it look like?
Maybe, John, tell me a little bit more about, you know, this intensive forestry you mentioned. Explain that out a little bit more. What do you mean by that?
But I mean by that that we have about 22 million cubic hectares of land base designated to, you know, the working forest, if you wish, in the province of British Columbia. That is about the same size as Sweden. Sweden produces at least 50% more fiber, identical to ours, than we do here. And one of the reasons for it is that the land base is designated. It's not the sawmills that exist in Sweden, and I've spent time there and in Holland, and I'm familiar with them. Is they at least, you know, most of their forest is private or are public to a certain extent, but they practice intensive forestry. So at least they do thinning. It's no different than a farm, you know. So that, and then the harvest is based on area-based, but not like here on volume. So here it's a volume-based harvest and the AAC. That means that why would anybody invest in the land-based if they don't get results of it? So that is another issue that is a problem underlying, but there is no reason in the world. Sweden went through the same as we had here at one point about 20, 30 years ago. They changed the forest policies. They thinning the forest at least once or twice during the cycle, and subsequently have 50% more, at least 50% more recovery. They do more value-added manufacturing. This is not reinventing the wheel. It's been done in other places of the world and successfully. Now in Sweden, with the same land base that at one point they had, same as us, about 60 million cubic meters, then one as though as 40 million cubic meters. Today, they have well over 100 million cubic meters of annual allowable cut. And that part is that it's not a question they don't have enough timber. They don't have enough capacity, enough mills to deal with all the timber that is available. So that's where we can be, and that's where I intend to go. And my philosophy is that we have the best location in the world. We have the best infrastructure in the world. There is no reason that if we put in the understanding the forest, how it works, get labor involved, get First Nations involved, get communities involved, and then attract entrepreneurship that will attract capital to create the best forest industry in the world. That's what I'm working on.
You know, John, you know, you mentioned manufacturing. I come from a manufacturing family. My father was a tool and die machinist. And, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, even then we saw this kind of manufacturing here in Canada, very a big shift. A lot of it went overseas, you know, cheaper labor, these types of things. And the same thing happened with, you know, forestry industry. The value added is something that a lot of people can get behind, and we're seeing slowly, we've seen, you know, little pockets of value added forestry happen. You know, we have one here just on the other side of Whitsett, Seton Mill. You know, they take balsam, you know, value added product, wood that would go and be shredded or be burnt in the forest. They're taking it out. So we're seeing these value-added projects happen. What do you mean? What exactly is happening? I know you introduced finger joining. You know, what is that? What does that look like for our listeners who aren't very familiar?
Let me put it this way, Dan, that obviously we have to, this immense resource that we have, this immense location, the unbelievable infrastructure in terms of getting product to markets, North American market, Asian market, European market. So we have the right location, we have everything. You know, we have the resource, but in order to get value-added manufacturing, there has to be a reasonable expectation of access to fiber, may that be timber or lumber. That has been the problem. Government has not been supportive of that. Neither has industry, like the Council of Forest Industry that claims to represent most of the production in the province of British Columbia. I was one of the longest serving members, 40 years virtually, being on the board, was the vice chair. I resigned in frustration because strategic differences of opinion last April. I was the founding president of BC Council Value Added Wood Processors, 8 associations, 800 members. And then I've been the Woodworks Initiative. I was the founding chair of all of that. But the government has to get behind it. You cannot have a government, and I'm not beating up on the NDP, the right wing or the left wing, or all those other things. I'm not part of that, other than to say that is an immense opportunity for us here. But we cannot attract capital or entrepreneurship unless there is reasonable expectation of good policy that supports adding value, social and economic, to the fiber. If we discourage that in any way, we don't have to give it away, you know, but we have to encourage further manufacturing. And unless we do that, then capital is going elsewhere. Entrepreneurship don't see opportunity. So I'm probably one of the last standing ones, and that has spoken out, has been here for 60 years, started out with nothing, worked with my hand, pulled it physically out of the ground. I wrote a book, Against All Odds. Read the book, and you can see that it has been a battle. I say no longer, so there we will see a value-added company that has been in business for 50 years, will buy the primaries, and we will show the new direction.
John, just the last thing for you. You know, oftentimes when I've spoken, especially these last few years when we've seen, you know, several of these curtailments and closures, a lot of people in the forestry industry aren't super optimistic of the future, especially if they're, you know, one of these workers who got a notice that they won't have a job in a few months by the end of the year. But you sound very optimistic. Why are you so optimistic? What's your hope for the future of these mills here in northern British Columbia?
I do a lot of flying, Dan, you know, in commercial airplanes, and every time I sit by the window, I fly over BC in particular, I look out of the window, I say, it's paradise. It is paradise. All I see is forest and opportunity. We have the best location. I'm not one of the naysayers. I'm one of the ones that is not going to leave. I came here with nothing. I started from the bottom. I'm a believer, and I walk the talk.
All right, John. Thanks so much for giving us your time. We'll leave it there for now, but good luck in your pursuit, and hopefully we'll chat again.
Okay, then. Take care.
That was John Brink in Prince George. You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer Pam Hassan and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.